Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear my voice, you are exactly where you need to be. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.net. We are your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale, the voice of paranormalunderground.net. The royal voice.
That's right. Rick and I think with royal one mind. We think with one mind.
Hey, Karen, how you doing tonight?
Hey, very good. Excellent. Good show tonight. We're going to be talking to Marie D. Jones.
Yes.
And she has a lot of projects, and she's a really, really prolific writer. So I'm looking forward to talking to her. And we had a little panic just before we came on the air because apparently she does some quantum physics stuff, and my modem or something, my internet went out, and Rick panicked. But he cried a little bit like a girl, I hear. But
well, it's okay, you know. Right? I'm going to be completely honest with you. As I've said before, I am an old-fashioned investigator and researcher. I have yet to really get involved in the whole, you know, quantum physics type thing. So, you know, give me another 15, 20 years, and I'm sure I'll catch up to you, Karen.
That's right. So, and at the top of the show, I think people heard Cheryl piping in, too. Did they hear you, Cheryl? Were we live when you said that?
You know what? We weren't.
Oh!
We weren't.
Oh.
No. I don't think we were. I think I said we weren't, but we weren't.
Oh, she was just trying to get us to shut up.
I was just trying to get you to prepare.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to Shadow House Paranormal in central Massachusetts. They apparently listen to us on Thursday nights. Their team does. They play us in the background and probably, you know...
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously more important things to talk about, so we're just kind of like background noise.
That's right, which is probably what we should be, and what we are to me a lot of the time. When the guests are here, we aren't, but the rest of the time, I kind of tune us out.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of the things I say are non sequiturs, is because I'm just really not paying attention.
No, I think you do. No, it's great. You were telling us before we came online that you have an investigation coming up this weekend, and you said that it sounds like a scary one. Can you tell us all about that?
Well, so you know me, Rick. What do I always say about dark and evil things?
You don't like them.
I don't believe in them.
You don't believe in them, right?
I do not believe that evil exists. Well, we have a residential this weekend here in town. Yeah, okay. And it's a couple that has been having all sorts of kind of dark problems, attacks on a 10-month-old baby.
Now that's where I would draw the line right there.
So I shouldn't do it?
No, do it, but
okay.
You guys need to do your best to get rid of it.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that. Somebody else is going to have to do that. I've never done anything that I considered dark before, and while I'm really intrigued by this and looking forward to it. Oh, and there's a pentagram in the attic too. Sorry, I was going to tell you that. So while I'm intrigued by it and looking forward to it, I'm also a little nervous about it because I'm not sure I'm ready to have the world is a beautiful, beautiful place illusions shattered.
Oh, no, it's still a beautiful place, but there's just like that undercurrent right there. That's, there's something that's not quite right.
So could it be just like a really turdly ghost that's really mean?
Yeah, it could very well be. I mean, as a lot of people know, as a Buddhist, I really don't believe in, the whole fallen angel ideology. But, however, I do believe that there are elemental spirits, and sometimes they are out to get us.
Uh-huh. I had a ghost poke me in the butt with a pistol. So there you go.
Oh, well.
Past weekend, I had one poke me in the butt with a parasol.
Oh, okay. But that's not exactly what you would call evil or negative.
No, that's just mean.
Yeah, that's just mean. I mean, you definitely, there are human spirits out there that will go that extra mile to make your life complete hell because they still see that place as being their house or their property. They want you out and they're going to do whatever it takes to get rid of you. And even if that means victimizing a 10-month-old child.
Yeah. So then what do you do in that case? How do you get rid of that?
Well, in the few cases that, that I've dealt with, the last 20 years of active investigation, I've dealt with maybe two cases where I would say there was something that was not of this natural world. The first one, I was still new to the field, and it happened back in 1991. That's the one where I got shoved on my butt by something.
Right.
Didn't really know what to do in that situation. But as, time progressed, I learned, techniques and that there are people that, specifically outside of clergy who are able to do this. But one of the things that we use in McHenry County Paranormal Research Group is we do sage properties. And I used to be a humongous skeptic of the saging, but after doing several of them and, staying in contact with clients and seeing that, hey, that this actually works.
Got rid of my ex-husband.
Well, there you go.
Uh-huh.
If it can get rid of the physical, it can get rid of the spiritual as well. It's a Native American practice, and what it does is it just neutralizes negative energy. Mm-hmm. And I found that it works. So
okay.
If you guys
want
to try.
I smudge. And like I say, I'm kind of joking when I say it got rid of my ex-husband, but not really. When my ex-husband, after he and I were separated for quite a while, but he still lived with me because he didn't have anywhere to go. Mm-hmm. And on the day he moved out, I followed him around with a sage, like the one of the bundles of sage, a sage bundle, match, some simple green and a cloth. And if he'd touch something, I'd spray it down and wipe it off. And then I'd sage. And, I felt like such an evil, mean person doing it, but it was like, no. I had to do it. I had to get his energy out of that place.
Right.
And at the time, that was how I dealt with it. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There are people that do have they do have negative energy about them. I mean, they're always negative and everything sucks and their whole life is terrible. So
yes,
they're miserable and we're going to make you miserable,
Yeah. We call them Eeyores.
Yeah.
We go a few of those in our life. So, hey, we're going to go to break in just a second. But I also wanted to mention it is my parents' 49th anniversary.
Oh, today. Congratulations.
I know. And they don't listen to the show, so they'll never hear that. But, still. Happy anniversary, Mom and Dad.
Happy
Just in case you don't have anything better to do on your 49th anniversary than listen to your daughter talk about ghosts on the internet.
Outstanding. So I think what we're going to do now is we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Marie D. Jones, one half of the Para Explorers, prolific author and all-around nice lady. So we're going to throw it over to Cheryl. Cheryl, take us to break and stick around. It's going to be live.
Hi, everybody. This is Douglas. I want to invite all of you 50s and 60s music lovers to listen to Old Time Rock and Roll, the largest oldies podcast in the world today, with a 110,000 song playlist. Our shows are always available 24/7. Go to www.oldtimernr.com. We have two new shows each week, and we take requests and dedication just like the old days. That's oldtimernr.com. Come on over.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal LeagueofAmerica.org.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Thank you. station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We have our guest joining us. Our guest tonight is from one half of the Para Explorers. It's Maridi Jones. She's also a really prolific author writing one of my favorite books, Science, and that's not S-C-I-E-N-C-E, but P-S-I-E-N-C-E, which was a really great book. She's also written 2013, The End of Days or A New Beginning, which we're going to talk about. 11-11, The Time Prompt Phenomena, which I have a few questions about. And and then her book, her newest book came out on Monday, and it's one of my favorite subjects, so I'm going to have to read it. It's called Destiny Versus Choice. Maridi Jones, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so your book came out on Monday, huh?
Yeah, it did. I wasn't quite ready. It's like, oh my God, you know, I have a publicity company, and all of a sudden I was getting bombarded with radio and interview requests. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's going on? Oh yeah, I have a book out.
Well, your website still says it's only available for pre-order, so your web people are going to get right on that.
Yeah, and it's my nephew. I'm so glad. I'm going to have to scold him.
Sorry, Aunt Marie.
Yeah, really. I'll never do it again.
So we have an argument about destiny and free choice, my husband and I do, and you have actually looked at some scientific evidence behind whether fate or free will rules the world. Did you reach any conclusions?
Oh, you have to read the book to find out. No, I'll tell you what I did do. I wanted to know the answer to this just as much because this has been a big debate in my life as well. And I have a lot of experiences in my life that really feel like destiny. I really do feel like I have a destiny. Mm-hmm. But also choice obviously plays a great deal in whether or not you get to that particular destiny. So What I wanted to do is just look at some of the different areas, whether we're talking DNA and a genetic blueprint for what we look like physically, which would sort of lean towards a destiny when it comes to human physiology, and then things like behavior.
So are you saying that I could be destined to have my butt this size?
You got a J-Lo butt, girl? You should be glad. Well, you know, there's always a choice, though, to have plastic surgery. So we live in different times now. But, I mean, ultimately, if your DNA is, you know, for you to have blue eyes and a particular color hair or whatever, that's sort of a blueprint for what you're going to look like. And when you meet someone and have kids of your own, they'll carry on your genetic blueprint as well.
Right. See, now I think that's really funny that you say that because my wife and I, we just had a baby about 8 months ago, and I am not kidding you, he is the absolute spitting image of me.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolute spitting image. Same, you know, big goofy ears and you know, and chunky feet. But chunky. So.
Oh, there's a detail I could have gone all day without knowing.
I'm trying to imagine that. I'm trying to visualize that now.
So that's definitely, I could see that where the blueprint comes in. But, you know, the whole, like, destiny thing and fate, that seems to be almost a, kind of like something exclusive to religion. Now, I'm sure that Christianity isn't the only religion that has a, you know, a fate and destiny thing. Can you fill us in on the other religions that believe that?
Well, you know, it's really not exclusive to religion. Philosophers have been arguing about this for thousands of years, and then the religious crew got in and put their own spin on it. Every religion has a concept of destiny, a concept of choice or free will, whether it's Buddhism or Hindu, and the concepts of karma, dharma, right action. And the funny thing is a lot of people think of karma as punishment, and really what it is a type of cause and effect where your actions have consequences.
Right,
and over
right.
time, your karma is what elevates you along the karmic wheel that your soul takes over the course of its entire journey and determines
Samsara,
whether you're going to right, you're going to move up the wheel or you're going to go down the wheel.
Yeah.
So every religion has this concept of a sense of predetermined experiences or a destiny that a particular person, especially in the story of prophets in the Western religions,
mm-hmm.
you talk about prophets like Moses, Christ, Muhammad, and the stories always include a sense of destiny. And I love the Christianity because that is the most obvious example. Now, here you have Jesus Christ who knew what his destiny was. He knew it wasn't going to be a pleasant one.
Right,
and even
right.
in the stories of the Bible, there are times when he questions that destiny, when he doesn't want to drink from the cup that he has been handed, mm-hmm, yet he mm-hmm. knows that he has to because there is a bigger picture. So he still has a choice, but he makes the choice to follow through with his destiny.
That's if you take those as a literal interpretation of what the New Testament says, or if you literally interpret the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And but if you take them as symbolic, like a lot of biblical scholars do, then actually they went back after the death of Christ and they rewrote those to create that sense of destiny.
Yes,
it's common biblical scholarship. What's
right.
that?
We have no idea what their motives were. Any of the authors of the Bible, the original authors, who we probably have never even seen the original works, but mm-hmm. this idea of there being. And this actually goes back to science. This goes back to the Big Bang. You know, how was the universe created? Was there some kind of intelligence behind it? Was there a first cause that set the whole process of cause and effect in motion by which all of the laws of physics and the universal laws came about that eventually made for life, you know, all of the different chemicals and the right balances of every chemical in order for life to come about. Was that all planned out somehow? Mm-hmm. It seems so sophisticated, so complex, so intricate that it's hard to not think that.
Well, I think it's also, I think something like that is predicated upon the idea of whether or not you even believe in God.
Very much so. And that was one of the big conclusions that I came to is that there's no way to possibly ever prove either one, destiny or free will,
mm-hmm.
unless we know what first cause was. And that first cause can go by the name God. It can go by the name ultimate consciousness, source, whatever the heck you want to call it. But the idea is if we don't know what put us here, I'm not saying it's a person, but if we don't know how we got here and if there was some kind of agenda behind the creation of life, there's absolutely no way to fully make that determination if it was destiny or a total crapshoot, random chaos.
Right.
So this is like one of the ultimate battles that keeps going on, just like, you know, are the brain and the mind separate? That's the other big battle that seems to be going on.
Or Coke and Pepsi.
Coke and Pepsi, yeah.
That's right.
I like Dr. Pepper, so I stay out of that.
I'm a pepper, too. That's right. So,
you don't even get in on that.
So there's... but when you start to break down the universe into very small... tiny, minuscule, sorry, Rick, quantum bits. There's so much order there. And there's so much perfection that it seems that clearly something created whatever that fabric is, the whether you call it the zero point field or whatever it is, that fabric that sort of brings together all of matter and all of the universe. So wouldn't you agree though that there does seem to be something there underneath, and then the argument becomes, okay, so with all of those little things whirring underneath the surface of everything, are they just doing it like a computer running a program, or do we actually affect it?
This is actually what Larry and I are working on next, trying to come up with this sort of foundational theory that the way we see things. But the interesting thing is when it gets down to the quantum level, and everything we're dealing with probability and potentiality, and nothing is really solid. It's all in a state of superposition. until an observer comes along. You know, the observer effect is what makes the quantum world interesting, because like you said,
yes,
it seems so incredibly intricate. Something had to have thought all this up. It couldn't possibly have just all fallen into place like this. And yet, at the same time, we know that the presence of an observer, that the intention or thought or will of an observer can change the outcome of a quantum experiment. So that leads us to think we have a hell of a lot of choice in what it is that we are choosing to bring about the physical manifestation of.
It's what we're choosing to pay attention to.
Exactly, exactly. So you know, you could take that argument even deeper, though, and say, yeah, sure, it's what we're paying attention to, but we're still given the field of what we get to choose from.
Yes.
You know, and just that whole argument can just get so crazy. It's like trying to understand infinity. But the quantum really changes it up, because you've got evidence, and I call it circumstantial evidence because we have no proof, but you have evidence for both. Some sort of predetermined field of all potentiality, and yet you've got the choice of what it is you're going to focus your intention and attention on to bring about into manifestation.
Mm-hmm. Marie, I do have a quick question, though, about that. Now, I've had a lot of people tell me that they believe that we are nothing more than an experiment or a plaything of some kind of humongous cosmic mind. Now, if this is a fact, where do you think that cosmic mind comes from? Where do you think it lives? Are we talking God, or, you know? And I'm sorry for bringing this up, but I am kind of a comic book nerd. Like in a lot of comic books, they talk about, you know, the Watchers. You know, people.
It's,
you know,
the I am that I am. That's what the Bible. That's what the Bible would tell you. It is. It's the I am that I am.
And it goes. I mean, Hermeticism, where we are thoughts in the mind of God.
Yeah.
Okay. I love the idea, because what it does is it speaks to that first cause as possibly being thought, pure thought, consciousness. And we're not talking again about individual consciousness like you or I have it. This is an ultra consciousness.
Okay.
But at the same time, it seems to allow itself to evolve. It seems to evolve with us. It seems to give us the ability to grow and evolve. So I like to think of it as an ever-evolving consciousness that we are all little, maybe like holographic pieces of. But it's not fixed. It is expanding and growing, kind of like the way, you know, the more you program into your computer, the more you're going to get out of it.
So it's like, you know what it's kind of like? It's kind of like the ocean, and you take a cup and you dip it into the ocean, and that's us for a while, then you dump it back in. And then, it's the ocean again. So that, but it's always, So I have a question about the observer effect, I guess, because I see a lot of people who, I don't know that they misinterpret it, but they use what they think quantum physics is saying, or at least what they understand it to be saying, and they think that, and what you were saying about manifestation and stuff. So then they think that if I just believe hard enough, I'll have $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
All I have to do is speak like I have $1 billion. And, you know, I've seen an awful lot of really disappointed people who are then angry at themselves because they didn't put their intention and their attention there enough. So do you think that what you're talking about with the intention and attention, do you think that that can create actual Christ walking on water miracles? Or do you think that it's more subtle than that?
I think it's very subtle. I also think people have no clue what they're doing, because belief has nothing to do with it. In fact, if anything, belief will cause you to manifest what you don't want, because we're driven by the subconscious. And the thing is, the observer doesn't have to be human. It can be any kind of measuring device in the quantum world. But what people are doing is, and it's funny because I read a lot of speculative physics, quantum theoretical physics, and even the physicists are saying, there seems to be something to this idea that what we call physical manifested reality, we are very much a part of creating. And this starts to get into that metaphysical territory. The problem is a lot of people will take that, simplify it, and run with it. So you have a book like The Secret, which I love that book. I think it's an incredibly profound book, but it's very surface material. I mean, obviously, the author wasn't able to write a 50,000-page book. But so what happens is people think that all they have to do is believe something or do a few affirmations, and they can make something manifest. And that's not how it works. What we're talking about is the constant, incessant, consistent focus of attention on a particular truth, putting emotional power behind that, ridding the subconscious of all doubt of that. And I mean, Christ talked about this. So did Buddha. The greatest teachers in the world will talk, but it is so difficult to do. Now, there are people that can do it. And again, we might be dealing with two different levels of reality here. One we have a lot of control over, and the more cosmic level that maybe we don't. And this is what trips a lot of people up too. So you can be a co-creator in your individual life, and a lot of people will attest to the fact that they are co-creating it as they go along.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But in a cosmic sense, I think we are embedded in a little bit more of a blueprint that we don't necessarily either understand or have a lot of control over.
So more of a karmic blueprint.
And also just we don't quite understand yet how it works. We know there's some laws of physics and thermodynamics and this, that, and the other thing, and gravity and blah, blah, blah. But we still aren't really sure on a cosmic scale what the hell is going on. So really, we have to focus on individual life, because that's what's right in front of our face.
Sure.
Right.
So let's talk.
Right. The metaphysical community took that concept, and even though physicists were saying, you can possibly extrapolate that to how we create reality with our brains and our perception and our belief and our conditioning. But there are too many people simplified it into, do your five affirmations a day and, just believe and it'll happen. And it's so much more hard work than that.
No, I think affirmations spur action. And I think that that's the power in affirmations. But you did say something that really interested me, and it got me thinking, and Rick hates it when I think, but I'm going to.
No, I love it when you think. I mean, because when it comes to this, I am going to let you carry the load on this.
I do. My husband and I, like, our pillow talk is quantum physics. So.
Oh, I love that. See, I need a guy like that.
here's what you were talking about creation, and that it requires intense focus and intense emotion and everything else behind it. So what happens when you have a group, perhaps even a worldwide group of people who are intensely focused on something, and they do have fear or some other emotion driving it, and they believe that it's going to happen, like, say, 2012.
Right. Well, look at
Y2K. So what's that happen? What's that?
In Y2K, we saw a lot of that on both sides. You know, people coming together in fear and people coming together in, more consciousness transformation sense, but nothing really happened. And here's my take on Y2K. I don't think we were ready. Now, 2012, I wrote a book about it. I don't buy into any of the westernized gloom and doom apocalyptic BS at all.
See, now
none of it has any foundation in anything that the Mayans or other Mesoamericans, I mean, they had a mythology just like Greeks, Romans, Norse, just like Native American mythology. And those mythologies always contain very symbolic stories of creation, destruction, but they're very symbolic and they mean something to that particular group of people. But the question is, now that in the last 10 years we have learned an incredible amount about intention, we have the Institute of Noetic Sciences. We have brilliant people like Dr. Dean Radin and Edgar Mitchell and Lynn McTaggart talking to mainstream audiences about the field and the power of intention to bring forth physical manifestation from the field, the quantum field. And all of these ideas now have hit the mainstream, and especially with the internet and social networking. So my feeling is, in 2012, on that particular date, if there is a tipping point of energy and emotion and intention, one way or the other, we could see some unusual things happen. The question is, which side is going to be more powerful when it comes to that intention and focus and emotion? The good guys?
Yes, hysteria.
Exactly, exactly.
Wow.
Is it going to be that, or is it going to be the crowd of, you know, we're going to ascend and exist in a higher consciousness and blah, 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 and...
I actually agree with you. That's kind of my thought about it too. You know, you said something and it made me think. You said that all of these societies that came before us had their personal, they had their mythologies. So what do you think, somebody 2000 years or 5000 years in the future is going to look at us in the year 2011 in the United States and say, well, this was their mythology? What do you think that's going to be?
I remember, it was when Star Wars first came out. So it was back 1977. Some writers and movie reviewers and film writers were saying, this is modern mythology. The space race, the sci-fi era. And I really think that that's true.
Yeah, greatest movie ever made.
Yeah, you know, but I think that hundreds of years from now, 1,000 years from now, people will look back and our mythology will be that we got off the planet. You know, we went to the moon, we sent probes here, there, and here, and we embraced the possibility that we are more powerful than we thought we were. We're less primitive. We're starting to move into that higher part of the brain, and that's going to be our mythology. And, of course, what happens between now and the next 100 years will have a lot to do with it if we don't end up killing ourselves somehow. The nuclear, the Cold War and the nuclear race, that's all going to be part of the mythology that people are reading about 1,000 years from now and thinking, oh, wow, you know, is this symbolic or literal, huh? The way we do the Bible. That'd be kind of fun to travel into the future and see. You know,
I truly believe that 10,000 years in the future, they're going to find copies of Harry Potter and think it's our Bible and that was our Messiah.
Absolutely. Mm. Or, you know, some Stephen King horror novel.
You're really Cujo. Cujo.
A zombie novel. What is wrong with these people, you know? Yeah. But really, I mean, yeah, every culture, every civilization, every level of culture has their own mythology. And basically what that is how do you describe reality, the stories you tell about it? We think we're so advanced now with our scientific knowledge, but 1,000 years from now, our way of describing reality is going to appear just as crude as, you know, reading the Bible or reading some religious text where they refer to anything that flies, any kind of flying vehicle, as a, you know, a flying locust. They were using the language and the knowledge of their time to try to describe things that we now take for granted. And I think, you know, our science fiction novels of today are doing the same thing. So it's going to be interesting. I wish I could be around. Well, maybe I will. Who knows?
In some other form. So you cover, actually, in your books, you cover a lot of my really favorite topics. I think you and I might have minds. I mean, we both like Dr. Pepper. That ought to tell you something
there. Yes, exactly.
Both peppers. But you also wrote a book about deja vu, the deja vu enigma, a journey through anomalies of the mind, memory, and time. And I've got to tell you, in the last couple of months, I have had two instances of the most intense deja vu I've ever experienced. So what's that all about?
Well, you know, the funny thing is the book started out, our publisher actually suggested that we write something about deja vu. And Larry and I were like, okay, well, you know, that's not going to fill a whole book. So it really ended up being about the human mind and the amazing power of the mind, belief, perception, you name it. But deja vu is one of those experiences everybody has. Everybody knows about it, but we trivialize it. It's like, oh, I just had deja vu, haha, and you carry on, go on, do what you were doing. But a lot of research is actually being done out there in a very scientific sense, because even though we know the parts of the brain that are involved and that does have something to do with memory recall, we still don't know why people have it, and we still don't know why people are so moved by it often, where they have visions of a possible past life. Some people have deja vu and they see a flash of something that then happens 2-3 weeks later. So all kinds of, there's time distortion. There's all these other elements that are added on to this very trivial experience that are now all the rage for people, you know, researching. And also the possibility, too, that it may not be a brain glitch or a memory glitch. It may actually tie into the whole concept of the multiverse or parallel universes or other levels of reality that we're experiencing ourselves in at the very same moment, and kind of opens up that whole big world of speculative physics too.
In the Matrix, they said when there was deja vu, it means that somebody had, what was it, that somebody had made a change to the Matrix, or there was a glitch in the Matrix or something?
She saw a ghost or whatever.
I actually think that I only saw one of the Matrix movies. I saw the first one. And Rick is probably shocked that I even saw that, because I'm not a movie person. But it, to me, when I watched that movie, it was actually pretty profound, because I think they kind of got it right. Maybe not the evil parts of it, but I think they kind of got some of it right. What did you think about that?
I thought that too, and it's funny because Larry and I constantly reference that movie, because the foundation of what they were talking about, this Matrix, this program, really was ahead of its time in terms of it, you know, having it be a part of a movie. And that's what I love about fiction, novels, and films, is that people can write about theories that the scientific community may be researching or toying with, but they're not ready yet to go out on a limb and say, you know, this might actually have some meat on it. But if you write a novel or a film, you can get away with exploring those concepts. And it's amazing how many times I read a novel and I'm like, oh, this is quantum physics. Oh, my God, this is space, you know, time travel, the newest research. Where did they get this? This is that. And that's what I love about the freedom that you get when you're writing. You know, I write nonfiction pretty much regularly. You don't have that same freedom. You can write about theories, but you're still operating within a certain boundary or limitation.
Right.
Because if you don't, then it becomes science fiction.
Right. Well, Rick and I are both paranormal researchers and investigators. So we focus a lot on kind of the unexplained things that happen that go bump in the night, or that, you know, throw pens at you across museums, or
that are going to eat you in the, you know, eat you in a forest or whatever.
So what do you think about all of those things?
The more that I look into this stuff and talk to people, and this goes for anything paranormal, whether you're talking ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, whatever, is that we need to broaden the possibility of what these things are. Originally, let's take UFOs, because I spent a lot of time in the UFO field. I mean, originally, the theory of choice was that these are nuts and bolts craft coming from some part of our universe, another planet, another solar system, another galaxy. And as time went on, different theories came into play based upon different types of sightings on abductee reports, contactee reports, and now we have different types of UFOs. And I'm not talking about military prototypes or misidentified objects. Let's keep those to the side. In terms of the stuff that is not yet explainable, we could be talking about objects that are coming from other times, time travel. In fact, you know, there's that rumored connection with the Roswell craft, that they were time travelers from the future. We could be talking about objects coming from parallel universes, coming through wormholes, coming from other spatial dimensions, holographic objects that we are seeing, because a lot of people in the UFO field get reports of objects that look like they're being projected. I was with MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, for 15 years, and I cannot tell you how many times people reported an object that appeared, sort of flickered in and out of view, and then vanished instantaneously.
Like that Brady Bunch episode when they didn't want to sell the house.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, obviously they couldn't find anybody with the projector in the attic, but and this has been happening with ghosts. I mean, a lot of sightings have that same sort of almost holographic or projected sense.
Yeah, when you look at them directly, they just sort of fade.
And cryptids. This is where you hear this the most. People walking along a road, you know, a deserted path, and a creature just literally pops out of nowhere and then vanishes the same way. We're not talking about something running out of the woods and then turning tail and running back in. So all these new theories exist now that could explain the zero-point field, the idea that things are manifesting from a field and then going back into it. When it comes to things like psychic ability and remote viewing and clairvoyance and precognition, mm-hmm. are we getting information from that matrix, from that field?
Well, that's Edgar Cayce would tell you, yeah.
Is that the Akashic Records? How are we accessing it? And this is another fascination of Larry and mine that we're working on, is what are the physiological, environmental conditions that have to be right for somebody to be able to access this information? Is there something to do with hormones and brain chemicals? Certain people genetically, are they more sensitive to this? You know, we're trying to look at everything we can, because we're a part of this, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We're the common denominator. Those of us that are...
Oh, we're the observers.
Exactly. So yeah. What is it about the fact that you can go to on an investigation, you can see an apparition, and the person standing next to you sees nothing? Or right. You can experience something, and three other people will, but the other seven, nothing.
Yeah, yeah, see, that happens with us a lot. My husband is autistic, and I'm not. And... he never experiences anything, and I see stuff. And I've even been with other people where everybody but him.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. That's real. I'm going to write that down, because that's a lot of what we're trying to do is, you know, how is the brain involved? How are there like dopamine, serotonin levels have to be a certain way, pH balance? People are talking about your blood types. How does all this stuff...
Yeah, well, look into people, autistic people, because people with autism tend to often either experience it more. In my experience, I know quite a few people who have like Asperger syndrome or something similar, and people who have it, one of two things happens. It's either really super intense, almost uncontrollably intense, or they got nothing.
Oh, I may contact you to talk about that. That is, sure. See, that stuff fascinates me. I love the paranormal. I mean, I love the ghosts and cryptids and beasts and critters and psychic abilities. But what I'm most fascinated by is what the heck is our role? Because we are the common denominator.
Right.
You can't, you know, if you go into a haunted house, if there's nobody there to see the haunting, is it really haunted? We don't know that. We probably have no way of ever really knowing that. But the common denominator is us. Yes. So my feeling is more research needs to be turned towards the human factor. And we've got all these pieces of equipment that we're testing environmental data. And that's fantastic, because we do need all of that data. But it's time for people to start studying us.
Sure.
You know?
Let me ask you a question about this, Marie. Now, I'm trying to play, you know, like the common guy, because that's what I am. Do you think there's a possibility that we're taking all of this and just sort of overthinking it, overanalyzing?
Sure. It could be. It could be. The truth could be right under our nose. But isn't it funny how when that happens, that's the last place we'll find it? I mean, we want to make everything harder than it is. We want to make it more complex. But what's so frustrating is when you ask someone, okay, what would the simplest hypothesis be? Or, you know, what would the most basic foundational explanation be?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like people are in denial of it. Because really, if you think about it, the most simple explanation would be this stuff exists. And we see it every now and then. But then, of course, you've got people like me who want to know, okay, well, I get that. But I want to know why you see it and I don't. I want to know why it shows up at 5:30 and not at 7. Mm-hmm. I want to know why, you know, people who live in swamps see more of this, but people who live in the... I want to know all the little mechanisms and triggers. But the simple, basic, foundational truth is there's a whole lot of crap going on out there alongside of the reality we take for granted and know very well, or think we do.
Right.
It's there. And even the scientific community is forced to admit there's something going on.
Kind of kicking and screaming, trying to drag them into this.
Well, right, because so much of it is subjective, and you know, they don't like that. And I can see why, because you can't get enough repeatability, and I mean, it's almost impossible to duplicate things enough to where you could say, okay, you know what, we finally got it figured out. This is what a ghost is. This is how it shows up. This is why it only shows up here and here to this person, that person, and that person. That's mm-hmm. like almost impossible to do. And yet, my thought is, if we focus on the people that are having the experiences, that might be where the answers lie.
Well, I think part of it also is that we don't understand the most basic aspect of being human, that which separates us from all of the other creatures.
That's we so believe. True.
I mean, we don't understand consciousness. We don't have a scientific basis for consciousness. We don't know if it's quantum. We don't know if it exists in our brain. We don't know if it exists in a field outside of us. We don't scientifically understand the most basic aspect of ourselves, consciousness.
Absolutely. You are so right. And that is the big thing that, you know, frustrates more people. Once you want to bang your head against the wall, because it's like, we don't know what reality is. And here we are chasing mm-hmm. things that are outside of our normal quote unquote reality. And that is probably something we may never know. The thing is, though, is we still are chasing it down, aren't we?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You're not about to give it up, right? Neither am I.
No.
So there's that drive in us. Even if we come to the end of our life having one little piece of the puzzle, although we still won't even be able to really prove if that's the case. But I think, yeah, there's just this innate drive in us to want to know the unknowable. And a lot of religions will tell you that the unknowable is the unknowable, and it's going to stay that way. But right. We're stubborn, arrogant humans, and we're not going to stop trying.
Yeah. So this is a good spot to take a break.
Okay.
And you're going to stick with us for about another half an hour, I understand. And yes. I do want to get into the 1111, the time prompt phenomena, because I haven't read that book, but I always wonder about time prompts because, you know, a stopped clock is right twice a day. So, yeah, so we will be right. That's right. We will be right back with Marie D. Jones on Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Stick around.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
Yo, what's up? This is the Black Eyed Peas, and we're here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in our lives, but nothing is more important than life itself. So when you drink and drive, you're risking the life of yourself and the lives of everybody on the road.
Girl, you Don't plan to drive, just plan ahead.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
To Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. We are here tonight talking with Marie D. Jones of the Para Explorers. And yes, I am still here, in case people are wondering in the chat room, and attempting to hold my own.
You're doing so, fine.
No, I know. You know, something we were talking about before we came back, Marie, was the... was a phenomenon that a lot of people, including my wife, experienced quite a bit of, was the 11/11 time prompt.
Right.
Now, you did write a book on this subject, correct?
We profiled it in the magazine. Michelle Pello did. Yeah.
Right.
And again, that was one of those things where it started out being about the 11/11 phenomenon, which I'll talk about in a second, but then it grew into a book about the profound metaphysical, paranormal, magical nature of numbers and how mathematics really is behind the structure of reality, the language of the universe, and it just, it's, numbers are absolutely fascinating. But we got into it by talking about these time prompts. And people all over the world have been reporting since the 1970s seeing 1111, not just on clocks, but, you know, billboard signs, receipts, you name it. Mm-hmm. Other time prompts, too. For me, I would always wake up every morning at 3:33 for years. I still do a lot. But 1111 is considered this profound and sacred time prompt. And we really didn't know why when we started writing the book. And then we found that it has a direct connection to December 21st, 2012,
okay.
which is the proposed end date of the Mayan long count calendar. And what somebody determined was the Naval Observatory's atomic clock, the one that is supposed to be precise to the nanosecond, that were able to determine that the winter solstice on that day, December 21st, 2012, begins at 11:11 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. So that
oh.
is...
Oh,
yeah,
really?
That's,
okay.
So everybody that's seeing 11:11, not everybody, but a lot of people feel like they're getting these sort of universal wake-up calls to pay attention, get ready, you know, work on yourself, be awake, stay in the present, something's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But being the devil's advocates that Larry and I are, we also looked at the fact that this could be nothing more than a phenomenon that has been spread quite recently by the power of the internet, ideas going viral, the fact that if you're seeing 1111 and you tell a friend, they're going to start seeing it because, you know,
confirmation bias, yeah.
Absolutely. Sure. The brain loves to seek out pattern, and people want to be a part of the crowd. They want to see it, too. We actually saw that happen in our own lives. Larry and I began to see it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now that, you know, we wrote the book a while ago, we're not seeing it as often, but we still met and talked to way too many people that really, truly believed this was something profound, something that had great meaning.
Huh.
See, I was just going to have a question about the 11/11 thing. Now, when my wife was having this, it was right before September 11th, when the terrorist action on New York and the rest of us happened. Now, my wife was having the 11/11 thing right before that happened. This was actually before we were married, and then as soon as that was over, it just sort of like stopped for her.
Stopped. Yeah, there's
now,
a lot of people that reported that, believe it or not.
Wow, really?
Right. Now,
because, I'm sorry, go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say that it almost seems like there was like a cosmic consciousness, I guess you could say, concerning it, that as soon as that happened, all of a sudden, just a ton of people stopped having the 11/11 thing.
Right, and a lot of people, you know, started having them right before that had never had them. There are experiments that are going on through the Global Consciousness Project, and at the time they were going on through Stanford University, involving these, they're called eggs, they're random event generators, and they are positioned all over the world. And what they do is they measure random ones and zeros and ones. And so the idea is that these random zeros and ones will be affected by collective intention, collective emotion, collective fear.
Isn't that
right,
Lynn McTaggart's project?
Yes. Well, she did one later called the Intention Experiment.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
If you go to Global Consciousness Project, you can the history of it. It started long before September 11th. Apparently, when Princess Di was killed.
Right.
The randomness, you know, the pattern that came out of that went off the charts, again for 9/11, again for Hurricane Katrina. So in other words, there seems to be this power to collective thought and intention, fear, anticipation, precognition even, that is able to register on these egg devices. Larry actually has one. He was able to get one from the project. And then Lynn McTaggart wrote a book called The Field, which is very much all about the zero-point field and intention, and went on to write another book called The Intention Experiment, and she's been doing ongoing experiments with collective intention, asking people to, let's all focus on this one particular thought for 2 months or whatever, and then recording what happens, and oh my gosh, there's a couple
interesting.
Yeah. Joshua Warren had one too. I think he called it the Genesis Project.
Yes, I think you're right.
Do you remember her? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I paid attention to all of those things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And also there's some experiments that Dean Radin was involved in where they were showing images to people and showing how they reacted to the images, you know, flash of a second before they saw the image, as if they had some kind of precognitive expectation.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that was cool too.
Yeah.
So you might have noticed in our little private chat window where we have our little conversation so that we
the 11:11, yeah.
No, but the 3:33 thing you said. I do that. Yeah. I get that's the time I wake up at 3:33 almost every night.
Well, and I hate to tell you, but that's associated with UFO abduction.
Really? Well, you know,
yeah, it's quite true. You're right.
I just always thought it was because numerologically I'm a 9, and it adds out to 333, and then you put them together, and I'm a 9 numerologically by my date of birth. And so I just always assumed that that was what it was. But I don't think I've ever been abducted by aliens.
I wake up that time waiting around, you know, drumming my fingers. Okay.
Come on and get me. I want to write about it.
But I'm you know, I love the number 3. I have a real affinity for it as well. And Larry and I wrote a book called The Trinity Seeker, which is all about the number 3. And I think what happens is, you know, again, we don't know if this is coming from inside or coming from external forces or maybe a little bit of both, where source, universe, whatever you want to call it, talks to you in the number 3, 3, 3 or 9, mm-hmm. talks to me in 3s, talks to someone else in 11s, because again, mathematics is at the foundation of music and vibration and resonance and frequency and just everything. All of the physical laws of the universe are based upon mathematical ratios. And so it kind of almost makes sense if there's a higher intelligence that maybe it speaks to us in symbolic numbers.
Yeah. Well, but that's a universal language. We can't speak in all in the same language unless we have our little Star Trek Universal Translator pins. There's my geek moment for you.
That's right. Or your, what is it, Google translation thing on your phone.
But numbers, I mean, anybody understands numbers. And I've never, I don't know, I know a lot of people who are into numerology. And all I've ever done is like my birthday. And and my birthday is 12/3/65, so that's why I say I'm a 3/3/3.
Right.
12/3/1965, because they each factor down to 3, which makes me a 9, because that's how you figure it out. And, you know, so I've read about those, and it says that 9 is a number of completion, and I'm hoping that that means that this is my last life, because I'm tired.
Are you tired? Yeah, worn down, burnout, come on.
Tired.
Really, you know? Need a break. At least get off that wheel of karma for, you know, a couple of go-rounds.
That's right. Well, you know, there's a channeled entity. My husband and I always joke that if we want to make a lot of money, I'm going to channel an entity. And, you know, pretend to channel an entity. There's a channeled entity that Lee Carroll, the guy who does the Indigo Children, writes the Indigo Kids books, he channels an entity called Kryon.
Oh, yeah.
Kryon. Kryon's very into the whole numerology thing, I know. But one of the things that the Kryon books, and I've read them because they're kind of, they make you feel good about yourself.
Right.
One of the things that the Kryon books are that you don't have to be a slave to your karma. You can be released from your karma at any time, just with the intention of being released from your karma.
Right. That's so much easier than done.
Well, clearly, yes.
But you know what's interesting about channeling is that, you know, for a long time I just thought, oh, brother. And then I started to think, again, reading about physics and quantum physics and theoretical physics, maybe what these people are doing is simply channeling information again in that field, in that matrix program that we don't normally have access to. And they're attaching an entity or a name to it, 'cause maybe they're talking to somebody.
I agree. I mean, there's the one of my favorite channel. I like reading some of the channeled works. Some of them are a little hard to follow. The Seth books were always kind of difficult for me. I never did A Course in Miracles, things like that. But there's Pat Rodegast channels, supposedly this angel named Emmanuel. And the Emmanuel books are beautiful. I mean, just you read them and they're like poetry, and either this woman is just a genius or she's tapped into something.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, a lot of fiction novelists will say that when they're writing their novels, yes, writing their stories, they start to feel like they're channeling, yeah, the story from some vast reservoir out there of stories. And I think it's the, mm-hmm, same thing. I like, you know, the Abraham teachings, the Law of Attraction teachings, mm-hmm, Esther and Jerry Hicks. And I've read the Matthew works. They're beautiful. Some of them have been just really incredibly wise and insightful. But again, you know, we don't know if they're really contacting a particular entity on the other side or if they're just accessing, and it's similar to remote viewing. They're, right, accessing information that the brain doesn't normally know how to access in a regular state of consciousness. And then, you know, going into a, right, consciousness, it opens up that field to be, right, accessed.
Well, it's just, you know, I think it's just a deeper level of creativity. I write fiction, and I'm also, and I write mostly nonfiction stuff, but I write some fiction, and I'm also a poet, which I don't usually tell people, but I am. And those things come to me fully formed. The poems, yeah, and the fiction. The nonfiction I have to work at.
You have to work at, mm, it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's not going to come to you fully formed, because even if it does, you have to check your facts and things. But
make sure it makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the poetry and the fiction, those things come to me fully formed. And I truly do not feel I write those things. I've never felt. I've
through you, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I say. They don't come from me. They come through me. So it's, yeah. So, and I tend to agree. I don't necessarily think that, you know, I'm talking to God, you know, in the Conversations with God book, Neil Donald Walsh attributes what happened, what his information to God. And, the Course in Miracles book is attributed to Jesus Christ, I believe.
Right.
And, you know, mm-hmm, all of those things. And, but I think you're right. I think it's more of an Edgar Cayce thing. And I know I keep going back to him, but he was the guy that seemed to get that it was all there.
He was so ahead of his time. He really, and again, he got labeled into that sort of new age thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
his ideas were very much what is being talked about today, you know, in relation to quantum physics and theoretical physics and the idea of this field of information that we can tap into for healing, you know, information about somebody who's at a distance. And the whole idea of entanglement with particles, that, mm-hmm, everything is connected. Well, does that apply to us as humans? And I mean, he really was talking about stuff that at the time was just so out there, and yet now makes sense. And, you know, a lot of his, and another thing is people say, well, he prophesies a lot of things that didn't come true. My belief is that when you have people, even Nostradamus, who make these prophecies, they're tapping into the field, and they may be seeing one potential future.
Right. It's not written in stone.
Exactly. Mm. And it's not necessarily the one that we're all going to experience as our collective reality, but they very well may be seeing a perfect vision of one of the many potential futures, or maybe a future in another universe.
But maybe they see that, so in order so that people do wake up and put their intention elsewhere.
Yeah, they see that destiny, and they say, look, make some different choices here. Otherwise, you know,
right,
that's gonna be it. Yeah, it's like sort of a wonderful way to bring the destiny and choice aspects into it.
Right,
sure. Definitely.
So now, Science, was that your first book?
My first nonfiction book was called Looking for God in All the Wrong Places, and it was like a sort of humor, spiritual commentary that I had done just on a whim. I really wanted to write something about it. Basically, it's about how everybody's looking for truth and happiness and whatever outside of themselves, when really you got to start
all right there, isn't it?
Yeah, an inside job. And that led me to get my agent, Lisa Hagen, who then helped me shop Science. And the problem with Science is when I wanted to do that, I mean, I don't have a PhD. I had no platform. Nobody really knew who I was. That book never should have been published. But I believed in it so much. I wanted to do it. I knew the time was right. New Page Books, God bless them, took a chance on me. And I mean, that book is still, I get emails constantly.
And I love that book. Yeah.
Years. From people still saying, you know, you have no idea how you opened up a whole new way of looking at the paranormal and this and that.
Well, and you make it very accessible.
I had to understand it myself in order to write it. My dad's a physicist. He's a geophysicist. And at the time, I was showing a lot of it to him. And, you know, a lot of it is again, it's theoretical. It's my sort of taking ideas and stretching them. But that's what the book was for. It was to open that door, to open the dialogue. But there were things that I had to read and reread over and over and over again to try to be able to distill them enough so I knew what the heck was going on. Mm-hmm. Except that I could then write about it. And it was tough. It was.
So I want to talk to you about how, because you write about some pretty deep concepts, and you do have to explore science to do it. Mm-hmm. You can't write about quantum physics without having talked to people and read. So how do you go about, once you get an idea for a book, where do you start with your research?
You know, usually, I mean, I grew up with science. I'm a hard science freak. That's always my sort of fallback position. But I always was interested in the paranormal and unknown anomalies as well. The thing is I will not write a book about something that does not interest me, because you've got to live with that book for a long time.
Yes, you do.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
A lot of times, because it's something I've already been interested in, I have a lot of existing books, or I've bookmarked 25,000 articles, you know. And as soon as I get a deal, or if it's Larry and I doing a book, as soon as we get the deal, we've done a proposal, we automatically start categorizing, you know, things into chapters. And it happens very quickly, because you're only given maybe 6, 7, 8 months to write a book. Science was written in under 5 months. I still don't have no clue how I did that. But, you know,
you didn't sleep a lot.
No, but I knew I had to do it. I mean, I knew I had to get it done. So you kind of go into the book already having a lot of access to what you know you want to talk about, because it's a subject that you're really passionate about already. And that just happens really quickly once you know what the layout is, what direction you want to go in. And you know, thank God for the internet. I used to have to go to the library when I was younger to do this kind of research. And it was hard because you didn't have it at your fingertips.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Shoot, I had a question, and then somebody sent me a private message, and now I've forgotten it.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I know what it is. So, you know how we were talking before about, I said the ocean and the cup of the ocean thing, and you dip it in the cup of the ocean, and so I believe in reincarnation, and it's not something I always believed in, but then I did an article on past life regression, and I went and had one. Because for the article, because, you know, I like to have experiences. In
oh, yeah.
I mean, that to me is just really fascinating.
See, so, I'm always afraid that it's going to come back that I was, like, you know, a serial killer.
Nah, or something. It doesn't matter, because it was a past life. But yeah. And then I co-wrote a book with a friend who's a past life regression hypnotherapist. Her name is Melissa Watts. The book is called Lessons of Many Lives. Jeez, I should know that. Anyway, and so I believe in past lives. And so when I talk, but here's what I don't know about past lives. First of all, do you believe in past lives? It sounds like you probably, given the
thing.
Okay.
You know, because it makes sense.
It makes sense.
I'm not a religious person by any means. For me, it has to make sense. It does not make sense to me that we are thrown here for one shot and that there's no meaning to it. It just makes sense.
Right. Okay. So given that, here's what I know that we live more than once. I mean, you can't know, but I kind of think I know that we live more than once.
But here's kind of knowing.
Yes. Here's what I haven't figured out is if I dip that cup in the ocean and that's me for this lifetime, and then I dump it back in and another cup dips in. So am I the same exact soul, or is it just part of my collective memory that's coming? Do you see what I'm asking?
I do, and I think,
is it the same cup of water every time?
I think, here's my take on it, and a lot of religions have different things to say, but they all seem to feel that there is a, again, sort of a field of soul or soul consciousness that we come from and go back to, and possibly each time we choose to reincarnate, we're taking another batch of soul, a generalized soul consciousness that we're going to shape into us in this new incarnation. So in a sense, you're always, there's a part of you that is always the same. the part of you that is making the choice when to incarnate and how and with what other people and what am I going to solve or what lessons am I going to learn this go around. But it doesn't always have to be that you're with the same family members or that you're with the same group of souls you were with last time. I like the idea that we dip back into the ocean, but we're still, it's still me that's doing the dipping, but I'm dipping a little bit of a different part of the ocean each time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually kind of, I think that part of us is in the same cup, but not all of it.
But it's still us doing the dipping. So there's kind of like that higher part of us that is,
yeah,
I hate to say separate, but overseas.
Well, but that separate part is the observer. That separate part is the third party. If you really spend a lot of time just being and just paying attention or even in meditation, what a lot of people report is that when they are in a meditative state, they recognize that there is a part of them that is observing them just being.
Right.
And I think that that third party observer is us, our higher consciousness. It's the dipper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we probably need to pay more attention to that third party observer because that is a part of us that is detached from emotion and intellect and is really locked into the truth. But yeah, it's again, easier said than done.
Right.
Yeah.
So, this has been so fascinating. I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours on end, but we're coming up against a break and we have another little segment we do in the show here in a minute. But I wanted to give you the opportunity to give our listeners any information that you wanted to give them, the names of your books, where they can buy them, your website, all of that stuff.
Well, there's too many books to name. So the website, there's two. There's my website, which is mariedjones.com. And then my website with Larry Flaxman is paraexplorers.com. And that's P-A-R-A, paraexplorers.com. And we would love to come back together and talk more.
Yeah, yes, I'm sorry definitely. Larry was sick today. Please tell him we hope he feels better.
He's a really brilliant guy and he's really cool to talk to. So that'll be a great conversation.
That's right, and Rick can brush up between now and then.
Another guy. See, yeah, you guys will be able to shut us down a little bit, too.
Does he like football, at least? I mean, we can talk about it.
No, but he's into motorcycles. And
here's what I figure is how often can you tune into any show, really, and hear two chicks talking quantum physics? Not very often.
And listen, we need more.
So join us. So we're going to go to break. And when we come back, Cheryl has written some lightning round questions for us. So we will be right back. Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Guy Who Wants His Own Paranormal TV Show.
Mr. Guy Who Wants His Own Paranormal Show!
You wear your beans with pride and your t-shirt three sizes too small, even though you have the body of a 98-pound video game nerd. Every location you visit may have a gift shop and thousands of visitors, but somehow you still get possessed by something evil.
You're dragging me straight to hell!
It may look like a bug to the rest of the world, but to you it's a demonic orb, and it wants to eat your soul. So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Overly Dramatic. Your acting may not be all that great, but you sure look awesome every time you see yourself in the mirror.
It's the guy who wants his own paranormal show.
Budweiser beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, it's John here from Haunted Cornwall FM in the UK. We will be on Z-Talk now on a Sunday afternoon from 3 till 5 Eastern. We do talk all about the paranormal. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's paranormal. Audience are invited to get involved. If you've got questions, ask, because we've got a superb team that will be able to answer them. don't sensationalise, we just tell the truth. However, if we find out there are fakes about, we will name and shame them. You've got to listen in to Haunted Cornwall FM from the UK on Ztalk 3 till 5 Eastern.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. And the odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio. I almost flipped that. I almost said, welcome back to ZTalk Radio on Paranormal Underground Radio. That wouldn't have worked, huh? So that was a really interesting discussion with Marie.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I saw Jenny criticizing me in the chat room saying that I was talking too much. But, you know, usually it's the other way around. So
yeah, that's right. So, I mean, every now and then there's got to be that one thing that, you know, and obviously you're the pro on this. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
so
I'm
was
not a
more
pro.
Than willing.
I'm just fascinated by it. So, yeah. Hey, next week, right before our show at 8 p.m. Eastern, there's going to be a new show on ztalkradio.com. So you'll want to tune into that. And it's the team Paravisions is going to be hosting an hour-long show every Thursday called Looking Into the Unknown. So tune in for that next week, 8 o'clock Eastern or 5 o'clock Pacific, and then stay tuned for Paranormal Underground Radio, because who do we have on next week, Cheryl?
You forgot the flyover states.
Oh. I know, I'm saving that for later.
Save it up for the special, yeah. Next week, we have Nightwalkers Paranormal Society joining us, August 25th.
All right, very good. So is Chad back from the pool yet?
Chad, are you back from the pool?
Yes.
He's here.
Okay. How was your swim?
He sounds excited. You have a nice swim.
So Cheryl.
What?
You wrote the lightning round questions again this week.
Yes, you have the day. You had the day off. So
well, I was supposed to be in court today, but it didn't pan out, so
yeah.
Yay.
I have a few questions ready to go.
Locked and loaded.
Yeah, ready to go.
Yeah.
So, you guys want to start now? You want to talk about something else?
Well, I don't know. What would you like to talk about?
Hmm.
I mean, the roundtable question sounded like fun. At least we can do something up with it.
Okay.
Or we could just sit here and, like, you know, have awkward silence for the next 22 minutes. I'm sure that would really, really lead well into the show that comes after ours.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And yes. So let's do
some lightning. We could just call it the awkward silence show.
And see who can do the better awkward silence.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think Chad might be winning.
Chad's, like, muted us and is typing in the chat room.
God, Chad, shut up.
How
Your
dare he?
Awkward silence is, like, really, really awkward. Good job. Kudos to Chad.
Do what?
Well, that contest was short. Did he just say do what?
You're the winner of the awkward silence show, or the awkward silence competition.
Yay.
See, there we go.
There you go. There
he's a pro. He's natural.
It's like talking to Silent Bob.
Okay. Lightning round.
All right. Let's get started. Our first discussion point centers on UFOs, and it comes from a Huffington Post news item, and the title is, as UK releases UFO files, former UFO project chief apologizes for quote-unquote spin and dirty tricks. And basically, there was a quote in this article. Well, let me set it up a little bit first. I'll read the first paragraph or two of the article. It starts out, as the British National Archives continues to release UFO-related documents, the former Ministry of Defense UFO project chief named Nick Pope is openly admitting to being part of what he claims was a USC policy of ridiculing UFO reports and the people who reported them. So it's kind of big news. The UK made public 34 previously classified files totaling about 9,000 pages of documents through the period of 1985 to 2007. During those years, from 1991 to 94, Nick Pope was in charge of the official MOD office. Well, there's a quote in this article that I thought was kind of stunning. It goes, every time we got a report from a pilot, we were checking the radar tapes. So it was an interesting sleight of hand. We were telling the public we weren't interested. This is all nonsense, but in reality, we were desperately chasing our tails and following this up in great detail. So there's some revealing information there from the UK. I want to ask what you think of this Huffington Post news report, and how common do you think this is around the world, you know, in the U.S., mm-hmm. in other countries where there's, you know, a vast amount of UFO sightings. Rick, let's start with you.
Well, you know, Nick Pope, you know, I've always kind of liked him. I always thought he was really interesting, kind of like the British version of Agent Fox Mulder. Now, you know, when you think about it, what I've always maintained is okay, there is not a conspiracy of silence. Mm-hmm. There is a conspiracy of stupidity. These people are just as much in the dark as we are, so they don't want to admit to it. So then they make up all these lies and half-truths, everything just to either make themselves look good or whatever. But I think that really the governments of the world are just as much in the dark as we are.
Okay. Okay. Karen, what do you think?
So I've had a couple conversations with Stanton Friedman, and he has something that he terms. I love Stanton because he's a walking soundbite, and you always know that you're going to get just like really quotable stuff that you remember forever mm-hmm. from Stanton. Mm-hmm. And he has a group of people that he calls noisy, nasty negativists. And he believes that there is a conspiracy of silence, and the reason is because the implications and the fear and the way that people would react, especially given what our how our popular media portrays UFOs in movies, you know, just mm-hmm. think about, you know, they're not usually cute little ET-like aliens. They're usually, you know, kick-ass coming to kill us aliens.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so he thinks that there is a conspiracy of silence, and they do it in order to keep people from just generalized panic. And, you know, I actually think that that's probably true, because governments around the world do not give the populace a whole lot of credit. They think we're a bunch of stupid sheeple.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's very clear if you look at our politics and what our politicians tell us and what our media tells us, that they really do think we're morons, you know, just flat out. And so, yeah, I it doesn't surprise me, and I think that they probably do just that, because they would rather intimidate us into feeling like we're stupid if we have something to report than have us panic.
Chad, what are your thoughts?
I think that sometimes they even go even further by engaging, you know, actively in disinformation to try and muddy the waters to the point that people don't know what the truth is.
Yeah. I think that happened with Roswell, Chad?
Yeah, to an extent. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it has to do with control and their feeling about it, you know, they're out of control in these types of situations, so they feel like they have to hide that.
Yeah.
Conspiracy of stupidity.
There you go.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's because they want to keep us sheeple.
Sheeple. Okay, cool. Well, let's move on to something that I found on the WashingtonPost.com site. The title is, Can You Still Ban a Book? Ray Bradbury versus Republic Missouri. This story basically talks about the town of Republic, Missouri, and the banning of Slaughterhouse-Five. And it was banned after a columnist included the title in a group of filthy, this is quote-unquote, filthy books demeaning to Republic education.
Oh, so it's all about them, huh?
I suppose so. So what I want to know is, 2011, still banning books, what's up with that? And do you think that banning books does anything whatsoever to achieve these people's mission who ban books? Karen?
Okay, so can I get a little ranty here?
Yes.
I think that I make it pretty clear that I tend to be slightly progressive leanings in my political beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think that not banning books is a progressive issue. I think it's a common sense issue. Mm-hmm. About a year ago, there was an article that was similar to this, that they were going to be sanitizing Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. Do you remember that article?
Yeah,
I do.
For use in the schools. And at the time, I just went, pardon my French, I went apeshit crazy, because what the bleep? You know, why on earth would they, why? Do they think that with all of the stuff that our kids can see on the internet and are seeing on the internet when we're not home and they're looking at porn, do you really think that you need to ban filthy books? Because kids have access to information whether we want them to have it or not. And not only that, but Ray Bradbury is, in my opinion, it's literature. And, you know, in its time, The Canterbury Tales was considered an absolutely dirty and shocking book. But yet, it's one of our greatest works of literature. Mm-hmm. So, no! Did I even answer your question?
You did. Did I just rant? You answered it. I think you made a good point that it's not a question of progression, you know. So,
right.
Rick, what do you think?
What do I think is like, you know, personally, I love Ray Bradbury. He's actually from the area of Illinois, you know, where I'm from. He's from Waukegan, Illinois, and, you know, from the northern Illinois area. But, you know, I just think it's bizarre that, you know, you can look up porn at a library, but you're not going to be able to find Slaughterhouse-Five or, you know, any other book. I can't fathom the idea of ever telling a child, no, you cannot read a book because, well, the Republic of Missouri says that it's dirty. Give me a break. All right. It's, I think the next thing for the Republic of Missouri to do is probably just to start burning them rather than banning them. That's what it's all about.
Ding, ding, ding. Another progressive on the show. Moving on.
Yes. Chad, tell us what you think.
Well, you know, we have to keep up with those religious ideals. The thing is that, you know, most religious texts are so rife with sexual infidelity and violence that if, you know, if they weren't considered their holy texts, they would probably have those on the list, too.
Mm. Interesting.
True. I mean, you know, you got to look at the Bible, and it's talking about, you know, slaughtering every firstborn child. And
oh,
you know,
the Bible. Yeah, the Bible has all sorts of stuff in it.
Well, yeah, I mean.
I didn't want to find a particular book, but yeah.
Yeah,
no, I'm not saying
Old Testament
that.
The Old Testament is insanely violent. You don't think the crucifixion of Christ was hugely violent? How about the Passion of Christ? Parents took little kids to see the Passion of Christ, which was insanely violent.
Yeah. Yes. There's nothing like, you know, 2.5 hours of watching some guy get the, you know, crap kicked out of him. But I mean, you know, historically, yeah, that was probably accurate. I'm sure Jesus was a real person and really did have to go through all that. But if you're going to ban one thing, you may as well ban the other.
Well, but if you raise your kids right, they won't. Books aren't going to influence them anyways.
That's right. Sure. That's why we let my 15-year-old son watch porn. I'm kidding.
Oh,
no, we do not. We do not. Anybody listening, that was a joke.
Well, if
you guys email me, let me know, dude.
All right, we're entering shaky territory here. I'm just going to say, if someone were to tell me I could not read a book, I would go and read it.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
I don't know how well that kind of philosophy works on the majority of people, but for me, it would probably make me read a book that I otherwise wouldn't have read.
That's right. Republic, Missouri,
go.
You know what you're doing? No, is it Missouri? Is that where it is?
It is. Republic, it is Missouri. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Republic, Missouri must really want people to read.
They must. Yeah.
You know, I think I've read Catcher in the Rye like 5 or 6 times, and I've never tried to assassinate a sitting president, so.
Oh, okay. You're doing good, Rick.
That's a man's book.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's move on. We're going to discussion point number 3. Cryptids. This is a news report from a site. I have no idea. What's it called? io9.com. I don't know if anybody's heard of that, but it's basically about a chupacabra caught on camera in the suburbs of Washington, D.C.
And is this the one that they trapped in the cage?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little
and
shaky.
And then they let
it go. So
yeah,
basically,
yeah.
You're gonna let a chupacabra.
The story is hospital employees in Prince George County, Maryland, caught a chupacabra while they were on a cigarette break. As Karen pointed out, they eventually let the cryptid go. I guess what I want to know is I find this story a bit silly, but what is the silliest cryptid report you've ever read or heard about, Chad?
Well, first off, I call shenanigans on that because they don't realize how much money they can make off it, you know, capturing a real live cryptid.
Right.
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans, yeah.
Maybe they were smoking something other than cigarettes.
I think it was an extreme close up of a rat.
There you go. A big rat, right?
A dog with a mange.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, it was not an attractive looking critter, but yeah, it was no chupacabra.
It was no chupacabra. Okay.
Okay, Rick? So after your shenanigans, Chad, what else?
What else?
That's it.
Shenanigans. Okay, to the point. Rick?
First off, it doesn't surprise me that there's another bloodsucker in Washington, D.C. secondly, probably one of the strangest cryptids I've ever heard was the Santu Sakai. It's out of Malaysia, and apparently this is some kind of demonic were creature that will jump on a person's shoulder and eat their face.
Okay, that is terrifying.
Awesome.
Yes, that's not a good thing. It's one of the silliest, but at the same time, it's definitely one of the coolest ones. But another silly thing about cryptids is that people always talk about how, you know, a certain cryptid or whatever, their feet are facing backwards.
Huh.
You know, as a longtime, person who's, looked at cryptozoology, I don't think so. I think a lot of cryptid reports are silly anyways.
Okay. They are.
Okay. Karen, so you agree with that?
Well, I have two that I think are silly. One, of course, was Bigfoot in the freezer.
Yeah.
He could have given us all beers, man.
And then the other one was, I think it was somewhere in South America, but I could be wrong. And it was like this troll-like creature that these kids supposedly filmed on a playground. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It was some troll on a playground.
Yeah.
All right, that's
okay.
All.
That's it. Okay.
That's the Pimbaro, I believe that's called down there.
Troll on a playground, Pimbaro. Okay, yeah. We just call it sex offender.
All right, let's.
I think there's actually a bigger issue to that than cryptids. Why are hospital employees smoking
exactly?
Yay! Good answer.
Exactly. All right. Okay, let's make this our last question of the night. Paranormal investigation. If you could conduct a paranormal investigation anywhere in the world, anywhere, where would it be and why? Chad?
The Egyptian pyramids, because, the amount of history that's happened there is astounding. And I would love to ask an ancient Egyptian spirit who built the pyramids and did they have any help from aliens?
Interesting. That'd be a great investigation. Yeah. Well, I remember when Destination Truth went there, they got some pretty freaky things on audio.
Yeah, they got some good stuff.
Yeah. Karen, where would you go?
I have two.
Okay.
One of them is Nova Scotia, where in 1909 or something, a munitions ship blew up in the harbor and in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and it blew in half the town and killed like over 1,000 people. So that's one of them. And the other one is I would really, and it may be too soon, but Iwo Jima.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I didn't even know that there was,
I don't know that there's rumors of hauntings at either.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rick?
Glam's Castle.
Yeah.
This place has everything. It has, jerk-off lords. It has bloody women dressed in white. It's got demons and it's got elemental spirits. It's got everything. It is like a paranormal playground for me.
So I'd like to change my answer, not to that.
Okay.
I would like to investigate. Now, don't take this wrong. Zach Bagans' bedroom, because I want to see if he has a haunted pair of bleens.
Sure,
no, because
Karen.
Talks about how they follow him home all the time.
Yeah. So, okay. Well,
I want to see if they follow him home and touch his butt.
Let us know how that goes. Well, I would like to go to any castle in Scotland, Ireland, the UK. Put me in a castle and I'm good to go. So I think all the history and, oh my gosh, it's just, it would make for a crazy investigation. So
yeah. So crazy.
Okay, Chad wants to do the last question real quick. Let's do it. Fright Night remake. How many of us saw the original Fright Night released in 1985? And how many of us are going to see the new one released tomorrow? Rick?
You're so awesome, Brewster. You know what? I totally loved the first one. And I can't stand Colin Farrell. His eyebrows, they bug me for some reason. But
he was awesome in Horrible Bosses, so there you go.
But David Tennant, I love that. I think that guy is a great actor. I loved him as Doctor Who. Yeah, I'll probably go see it.
Sweet. Chad?
I love the original, and I agree with Rick, David Tennant. You know, to me, that's just one, you know.
Peter Vincent, reason. Man.
Yeah, to go see it. It's going to be an awesome. I mean, you have to go see it.
Okay, we're going to go. Karen, are you going to go see it?
Well, you know, I think it's really disrespectful to Patrick Swayze, and I want it, but I do want to see if they say nobody puts baby in the corner again. In other words, I didn't see the first one, and I'm probably not going to.
That's like, where are you going with this, Karen? Okay. So, Karen, watch the first one on video. I guess it's okay. DVD now, on DVD,
okay. And then probably stream it on Netflix.
Yeah, stream it and then go watch the new one.
Okay,
you won't regret it.
Or I can just keep bitching about the Dirty Dancing remake.
Yes, or you could do that. That's pretty funny.
How do you remake Dirty Dancing?
I don't know. See, now that's a question. What the heck?
That is a good paranormal question.
Type thing.
Who was thinking of that? I mean, next thing you know, they'll be redoing Footloose.
Ah, very funny.
I thought they were going to remake that.
Oh, are they?
Oh my god!
Yeah.
I thought you knew that.
No, I
oh yeah,
that.
They're redoing Footloose too.
Kevin was supposed
to have
play,
Kevin Bacon make a cameo.
I think so. I think I heard that. Yeah.
I just want to see if somebody puts baby in a corner and gets away with it. I really.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
So I guess the guy that plays Patrick Swayze's character will probably be emo and.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Hey.
Well, my goodness. So, yeah, Chad, did you want to answer your own question? Because we have just a couple minutes.
I'm going to see it with Chad. I did see the first one, which I thought was freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how this newest version is going to compare, but we're going to see it.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Before we sign off. Next week, come back, August 25th. We're going to be talking with Nightwalkers Paranormal Society. In the meantime, please go to paranormalunderground.net. Read our latest issues. We're going to have a new issue online in about 4 or 5 days. So check that out and come to the forum and post about your favorite paranormal topics because we like discussion there.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And thanks.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Thank
it was
you, everyone,
great
for listening.
Conversation. And thank you to Marie D. Jones, who
thanks,
I
Marie.
Hope we have back soon.
We will.
All righty.
Well,
okay, so thank you, everybody. We will be back next week. That is at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in...
some strange flyover
states.
Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the ZTalk Radio Network.
See you.